This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
While most video surveillance solutions capture and store hours of nothing, CUDA Eye by Barracuda Networks only captures video when something happens. Once captured on camera, the video evidence is immediately encrypted and sent to the cloud for safe storage and easy retrieval from any web browser or mobile device. With CUDA Eye, there's no network configuration or software to install. Just plug one or more cameras into your network to better protect your business. Don't get caught with nothing. Do something about it. Check out CUDAEye.com. That's CUDAEye.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Ryan, a step closer. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It's Thursday, October 22nd. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan, the former vice presidential candidate, has won the support of most of a group of House conservatives to be the next speaker.
Ending months of speculation, Vice President Joe Biden says he will not be launching a run for the White House. The sigh you heard was from Hillary Clinton.
In sports, the Mets beat the Cubs to advance to the World Series. In the American League, it'll take at least six games between the Blue Jays and Royals.
And the high stakes for Hillary Clinton and members of the House Select Committee on Benghazi today.
Kevin McCarthy, the majority leader, believed to be the top successor to Speaker Boehner, dropped out from the speaker's race over what many believe were comments he made about the Benghazi panel, suggesting that the panel was specifically created to take down Hillary Clinton's poll numbers.
Scott Wong at The Hill previews the Benghazi hearing in about 2 minutes. So the group that forced House Speaker John Boehner onto the sidelines is mostly showing support for Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin to replace him. Mr. Ryan, chairman of the powerful Ways and Means Committee and a former vice presidential candidate, won the backing of most of the 40 or so members of the hardline conservative Freedom Caucus last night. That was the biggest hurdle on the path to the speakership. After securing the support of about two-thirds, Mr. Ryan now likely has enough votes to be elected next week. Current House Speaker John Boehner.
We all know Paul Ryan, right? He's a very good member. He works hard. He's very bright. And he has good relationships, I think, with all the wings of the party. So that's why I think he'll be doing fine.
The Freedom Caucus, by the way, didn't officially endorse him, but Mr. Ryan indicated that the group's offer of support was sufficient to demonstrate the party unity he was demanding to take on a job he hadn't wanted. Mr. Boehner, by the way, is leaving Congress at the end of next week. Vice President Joe Biden will not make a run for the White House. He ended months of speculation yesterday, saying he's run out of time. He made the announcement in the White House Rose Garden, flanked by his wife Jill and President Obama. Mr. Biden's decision eliminates the possibility of a three-way battle for primary votes and leaves just Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders as the only threat to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, the current Democratic leader in national polls. Few people are more relieved than Mrs. Clinton, by the way. According to polling by the Wall Street Journal and NBC News, Mr. Biden would have taken more votes from Mrs. Clinton than Mr. Sanders.
While I will not be a candidate, I will not be silent. I intend to speak out clearly and forcefully to influence as much as I can where we stand as a party and where we need to go as a nation.
As of late Tuesday, Mr. Biden continued to spark speculation after he took thinly veiled swipes at Mrs. Clinton, casting himself as the president's closest advisor and drawing distinctions with Mrs. Clinton. The announcement, by the way, likely signaled the approaching end of a political career that has spanned more than four decades. Elected to the U.S. Senate at age 29, Mr. Biden spent 36 years on Capitol Hill and made two runs previously at the White House. Well, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton makes her much-anticipated appearance before the House Select Committee on Benghazi today. The group's investigating the 2012 attack in Libya that left four Americans dead, something that happened on her watch. But the current frontrunner in the Democratic presidential primary isn't the only one with a lot riding on the hearing. Scott Wong, senior reporter at The Hill, says the 12-member committee is loaded with ambitious lawmakers from both parties looking for a breakout moment on the national stage. He joins us now on the T-Mobile hotline. Scott, set this up.
There are enormous stakes for all players involved, not only Hillary Clinton, but for many of the panel members who are eyeing possibly other political offices, including runs for a Senate seat, including possible runs for Speaker of the House. So there are high stakes for all players involved in Thursday's hearing.
Wow. All right. So give us some names to watch here, Scott.
Well, what's interesting is there's at least four members of the Benghazi committee who are possible candidates for Speaker. We know that John Boehner has said he plans to step aside at the end of the month. There's a lot of uncertainty over who could step in to succeed him. Four of those members of the panel could run for Speaker. They include Jim Jordan of Ohio, Mike Pompeo of Kansas. Another person to watch is the chairman of the panel, Trey Gowdy of South Carolina, a very popular figure. He says he's not interested in the speakership, but there's a lot of speculation that he could return back home to South Carolina and launch a bid possibly for the governor's office or for, attorney general. He is a former federal prosecutor, ironically appointed back in the day by President Bill Clinton.
There is risk here, though. While you could help yourself as a lawmaker and look good in front of the TV and in sound bites, you could also hurt yourself, I guess.
Well, and that's what some of the discussion has been surrounding the Benghazi panel in recent weeks. Kevin McCarthy, the majority leader, who was believed to be the top successor to Speaker Boehner, dropped out just a couple weeks ago from the speaker's race over what many believe were comments he made about the Benghazi panel, suggesting on a Fox News interview that that the panel was specifically created to take down Hillary Clinton's poll numbers. That's been something that many Republicans have been insisting for months and months is not true. And so he completely undermined those efforts and was subsequently forced to drop out of the race. So there's going to be a definite effort on the part of Gowdy, the chairman, as well as other Republicans to make clear that this panel is not politically motivated, is not, was not created just to try to undermine Hillary Clinton, but is more focused on getting to the bottom of what happened on September 11th, 2012 in Benghazi, Libya.
Wow. We're speaking with Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill. His piece is called High Stakes for Hillary and Lawmakers in Benghazi Panel Showdown, which is on Thursday. What do you think has the most to lose, Scott?
You know, for Republicans in general, there is just a lot at stake. You know, and anything seen as an effort to overreach in any way or make this panel seem overtly political could undermine Republicans' overall message and, message against Hillary, simply that she is untrustworthy, that she has not been forthcoming about her emails when she was at the State Department, especially related to Benghazi. So I think Republicans in general just have a lot at stake. I think Hillary Clinton is a seasoned politician. She's polished. She's just coming off a very strong debate performance. She is going to be ready. The question is, will the Republicans be ready for her, I think.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Wong, senior reporter at The Hill. By the way, Ron Fournier at National Journal calls today the, quote, face-off of the frauds. He says before the discredited House Select Committee on Benghazi swears in the discredited Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton, he says, let's review what we've learned about our political leadership since that terror attack in Benghazi. Number one, he says the first person to politicize the tragedy was a Republican, meaning Mitt Romney. Number two, he says Democrats responded with a lie. Number three, Clinton and her team failed to secure the compounds. Number four, Republicans failed to find much more. Number five, Clinton obstructed GOP investigations. And number six, Clinton is a good witness. Again, from Ron Fournier at National Journal. 15 minutes after the hour, on this morning, America's First News. Getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. First, going to the post office takes up valuable time, and leasing a postage meter is expensive with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Luckily, there's a better way. Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. Even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal. Thanks for being with us. Good Thursday morning. It's been an unsettling week in Albuquerque, New Mexico. First, there was the road rage killing of a 40-year-old girl on Interstate 40 on Tuesday. Police say two vehicles cut each other off. Then a short while later, shots were fired. Now, a 32-year-old man named Tony Torres has confessed to the killing. The father had just picked up young Lily Garcia from school along with her 7-year-old brother. The children were sitting in the back seat of their father's pickup truck when the incident occurred. Separately, an Albuquerque Police Department officer was shot last night at a Walgreens. The suspect, identified as a 34-year-old Davon Lyman, with a man with a violent criminal record, was captured just after midnight. Gordon Eden is police chief in Albuquerque.
It appears at this time that the officer had engaged in a traffic stop. There was an altercation, and the officer was shot multiple times.
The wounded officer, an 8-year veteran of the force, was undergoing surgeries at the University of New Mexico Hospital. KOB Television says he was shot in the head and neck. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
In Wisconsin's Paul Ryan is now a step closer to trading the job he has and loves for one he never sought, that of Speaker of the House. As members of the Freedom Caucus emerged from a meeting last night, they said Ryan has the votes from the Republican conference he needs to become Speaker. The White House is strongly condemning a visit to Moscow by Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. A spokesman criticized Russia for putting on a red carpet welcome. The Syrian leader's trip comes 3 weeks after Russia began airstrikes in Syria against ISIS and other forces. Anti-secrecy website WikiLeaks has posted documents it claims were obtained from a private email account used by CIA Director John Brennan from 2005 to 2008 when he was not serving in government. The CIA says none of the posted documents are classified and calls the hacking of the Brennan family account a crime where the private electronic holdings were plundered with malicious intent. President Obama says prescription drug abuse is exacting a terrible toll across the country and causing pain for millions of families. The president was in West Virginia yesterday to announce new steps to help improve doctor training and ease access to drug treatment.
Rather than spending billions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, on long prison sentences for nonviolent drug offenders, we could save money and get better outcomes by getting treatment to those who need it.
West Virginia has the highest rate of overdose deaths in the country. Kudos for the Mediterranean diet. Researchers are now tying a diet rich in fish, beans, and olive oil to brain health. They found that the diet, which also limits the amount of meat, dairy, and saturated fat you eat, may make your brain about 5 years younger. And the Mets advanced to the World Series for the first time since 2000, completing a sweep of the Chicago Cubs in the NLCS with an 8-3 victory last night. Howie Rose had the final call on WOR.
Here's the payoff pitch from Familia to Fowler on the way. And it's in there, strike three called. The Mets win the pennant. The New York Mets have won the National League pennant. Put it in the books.
The Mets await the winner of the Royals-Blue Jays series, which Kansas City leads 3-2. Game six is tomorrow night in KC.
I went to bed anxiously when the score was 6-1 with the Mets leading. I just couldn't stay up anymore.
Well, I can understand that.
I saw the first inning, 4 runs, fell asleep, woke up there up 6-1.
It was over in the first inning. You didn't need to see more.
I did miss Daniel Murphy making history.
No.
God, the guy cannot keep the ball in the park. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Guess what's getting a new look on campus? homesickness. Researchers say it is a distinct emotional condition. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger has a look at what some schools are doing about it. Sue, what's being done?
Researchers are taking a closer look at homesickness. It's often just lumped together with, oh, the students having adjustment problems, they'll get past it. Researchers are saying that the homesickness is actually a distinct sort of grief experience where the students are longing for familiar feelings of home. It's more than just missing mom and dad. It's just a sense of predictability and comfort and routine that they miss. And some students do fine with it, most do, but a few, about 5%, actually find it causes anxiety or depression if they don't act to pull themselves out of it.
Wow. All right, so how do you know then whether you're a student or, say, a school official, or maybe even a parent, like an adjustment period versus, say, a depression or some sort of serious problem?
Right around now, 6 or 7 weeks into the term, the student should be pretty well acclimated, getting out of the room, involved in some activity or friendships. The key clue is that if the student's spending too much time in his or her room, ruminating, thinking, calling home maybe more often than the parents expected, those are signs that the homesickness isn't getting better. And when it becomes chronic, that's when it becomes sort of a mental health risk.
All right. Does this happen with students who are typically far away, or might they just be living a campus yet only 10 miles away?
Well, usually the out-of-state students, university officials tell me, are at higher risk of dropping out. Not quite sure why they have the adjustment problems. It could be financial, of course, but also they tend to not be able to go home on weekends, and if other students are, that's a big problem.
Gotcha. All right, so what's being done then? Who's doing what on campus?
Well, campus officials are, in some cases, organizing stress relief sessions with a lot of comforting things, like University of Minnesota brings in therapy pets, dogs, bunnies, and a chicken named Woodstock. Other universities are having stress relief sessions, even with big bounce houses like kids use on birthday parties, or therapy pets, arts and crafts sessions, just things to remind students that it's okay to take a break and have fun. This, of course, draws them into socializing with other students, which is a major goal.
Right. All right. So is there some sort of publicity campaign that the schools undertake to find these students?
It's really not above board on campus. Students don't like to talk about it, and they don't want to be identified as homesick, which is one of the issues that mental health officials face in dealing with it. So they tend to present it as stress relief or get involved on campus. And those are the ways they talk to students about it. And, of course, they try to make mental health counselors available easily so students can go in without feeling stigmatized and find the help they need.
Thanks, Sue. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger. Her column is called Work and Family. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Men, if you're like me, you appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. The sort of shave that cuts clean, without the burn. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? And if saving money and a clean shave isn't incentive enough, Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. Our way of saying thank you for trying us. How are we able to save you all this money and still give you the best shave you'll ever enjoy? By owning the factory that manufactures them. That's how. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 4000 at checkout. That's Harry's.com, code 4000.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Good Thursday morning, October 22nd. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Clinton testimony on Benghazi today. Ryan a step closer to House Speaker. Biden not running for president. Authorities in St. Louis say arsonists have targeted 7 churches recently. A masked man with a sword attacked a school in Sweden today. YouTube is rolling out an ad-free subscription video service. McDonald's testing sales of Monster Energy drinks at some stores. ESPN plans to lay off about 300 people. Mets in the World Series and how to get out of a water fine in California. That story in about 20 minutes. The federal government has a little less than 2 weeks before it runs out of borrowed money to pay its bills. Meanwhile, Joseph Lawler, economics writer at the Washington Examiner, says Congress is already pushing the boundaries of how long it can go without raising the debt ceiling. He's got to look at how things might play out. Joe, what do you have?
This is a timeline for what's going to happen over the next few weeks as the debt ceiling deadline comes closer and Congress works for a solution. And basically it lays out the deadlines at which certain critical things will happen, ultimately culminating, if nothing's done, in the government missing a payment on one of its obligations, like paying the military or Social Security, or in the worst case scenario, missing a payment on the national debt.
Have we ever missed a payment on the national debt, by the way?
We actually have, but in one or two circumstances, but they were not like we would be facing today. So those were, there was once, I'm not sure when this was, but there has been an instance in which the Treasury payment system broke down and investors were delayed by like one day in getting their payments back. But never anything serious along the lines that this would be.
Right. All right. So a lot of people have circled November 3 on the calendar, right? That's technically when the government runs out of borrowed money?
Right. So the best way to talk about November 3rd, that's the date that Treasury Secretary Jack Lew mentioned. And the best way to describe it is that's the last day on which he can guarantee that the government will be able to make all payments on time and in full. So it's possible that the government could go beyond that without missing a payment, but at that point you're in uncharted waters, and there's no guarantees.
We're speaking with Joe Lawler, economics writer at the Washington Examiner. His piece is called Here's How the Debt Ceiling Crunch Will Play Out. All right, so give us a sense of what's happening kind of between now and November 3rd.
Sure. So here's what's happening already is investors are demanding more payment on Treasury bonds that come due right around or after November 3rd. And they're not going up by – they're not demanding too much more, but what's happening is they're demanding extra compensation for the remote but real perceived risk that the Treasury won't make a payment on those debts. So that's what's happening right now. And this week, Congress is going to be looking for a way to raise the debt ceiling in order to eliminate that risk.
Got it. What kind of bills do we actually have when it comes to debt?
We have all kinds of debt. We have the bills I'm talking about are short-term debt. So you can look at like a one-month Treasury security that, a 1 month Treasury security that was issued October 3rd that comes due November 3rd. That's the kind of note that investors might start to see a little bit of risk creeping into its repayment prospects.
Why is it, Joe, that we seem to go through this on a very frequent basis?
Yeah, it's kind of one of these, you know, fiscal pressure points that keeps coming up. And the reality is that Republicans and Democrats have very different ideas about how the government should be spending and taxing. And this is just one of the kind of forcing junctures that creates an opportunity to have a serious debate around those issues. And it's not just, it's become more tense recently, but it's always been that way.
Thanks, Joe. Joe Lawler, economics writer at the Washington Examiner. 21 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Some good news for football fans in New England and bad news for everybody else in the NFL. Tom Brady, who has been on a mission to prove his Deflategate detractors wrong this season, says he wants to play in the NFL for another 10 years. Brady dropped his plans to dominate for another decade at a conference call with reporters yesterday. However, even a future Hall of Famer with 4 Super Bowl rings will concede that he is human after all, saying that it's not always up to him, but that's what he's hoping for. Brady has showed no signs of slowing down at the age of 38, throwing 14 touchdown passes in 5 games, all presumably with properly inflated footballs, while leading his Patriots to a perfect 5-0 record going into a big game against Gordon's New York Jets this Sunday.
All right. So you and I, 10 years from now, will be saying Tom Brady, in a 3-touchdown performance yesterday, brought his grandchildren to the game. What a nice moment following the victory.
Exactly. You know what, though? If there's anybody who can pull off playing for another 10 years, it seems like it's him.
Would you stop, please?
I mean, he cannot be stopped, Gordon. The league cannot stop him. Injuries cannot stop him. No, nobody can stop
him. Have you looked at the Jets' defense, Mike?
Come on. Please. You've been talking about this. This is 15 years now that the Jets have been thinking that they're going to stop Brady, right. and they're not going to.
Fair enough.
Even if they stop him on a given Sunday, which they have been known to do,
yes.
In the long run,
that
he still
true.
Wins.
Fair point.
He has won,
and he will always win. Move on.
And moving on. More good news this morning, Gordon, this time for emoji lovers, especially those who wish they could give the one-finger salute to someone who has wronged them in the digital world. Apple's new iPhone update, iOS 9.1, brings 185 new emoji to the smartphone. By the way, apparently emoji is the plural of emoji.
I was just going to ask you that.
At least that's according to the highly recognized publication that I found this story on.
Really?
Emoji, I guess, is the plural there.
So it's like deer and deer.
Right. So no typo there, as far as I know. And, you know, I don't know enough to be able to go against them on that. So I'm not tech-savvy enough to figure that out. So anyway, there's now a middle finger emoji, which is formerly called the reversed hand with middle finger extended.
Does that surprise you?
That they have a middle finger emoji?
That's surprising, because that doesn't seem to fit the mode of the other emoji that are
available. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's any other more risque emoji. Again, I don't know the emoji that well.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's the first one that they've ever had. But I don't know. It could cause a little bit of controversy, you would think. Especially for parents, perhaps.
Okay.
You don't want to see that on their kids' phones, right? Now, if you're more of a glass half full kind of texter, there's also a brand new pink unicorn emoji at your disposal, in addition to a taco, turkey, and rolling eyes, among others.
Oh, that will be one I will use.
The rolling eyes. Oh, yeah.
I love that.
See, that one could be a lot of fun.
Yes.
You can download the iPhone update by going to the Settings app, then Software Update. But, of course, be sure to back up your device first, just in case.
Wow.
Now, you are a frequent user, surprisingly, of emoji. I have gotten all emoji texts from you recently, which made me think this might be a story you might be interested in.
Well, I've become one. Over the past couple of months, I guess, when I figured out that they were actually there on the phone and it was not some app I had to download.
Yeah.
I had to go to my 10-year-old daughter for that consultation.
They've actually been there for a while, I'm pretty sure. You just discovered them now.
I just discovered them now.
Okay.
And I was very anti-emoji.
Yes.
And now that I have them, though...
They are hitting a critical mass. There are people, again, guys like yourself, two kids, a job, and a mortgage, who I see putting those things up on all over the place, not just on phones, but also on Twitter and Facebook and all over the place. So they are becoming a thing, for sure.
I'm one for sarcasm and cynicism, so I tend to use the wink.
Yes.
The winking emoji, probably the most, followed by the thumbs up.
Okay.
I would say those are the two most popular.
I'm looking forward to your first use of the middle finger emoji.
We'll not be using that one. 14 minutes now in front of the hour. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. Thanks for spending time with us. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Secretary of State John Kerry met Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today and pressed Israelis and Palestinians to take clear steps to de-escalate violence. Kerry says it's absolutely critical to end all incitement and all violence. The House Select Committee on Benghazi holds a public hearing today for the first time in nearly 10 months. The spotlight will focus on a sole witness, Hillary Clinton. But the panel also will draw scrutiny, especially with complaints from Democrats and some Republicans that the investigation is a partisan-driven effort to undermine the Democratic frontrunner. A 32-year-old man has been charged with murder in the road rage shooting that killed a 4-year-old girl in New Mexico. Albuquerque Police Chief Gordon Eden says Tony Torres was arrested yesterday for the death of Lily Garcia.
He is currently in custody. He has been booked into MDC and is being held on $650,000 bond.
The shooting happened after the father picked up the girl and her older brother from school. California health officials are investigating a bacterial outbreak that has sickened 93 people. Shigella has been tied to a single restaurant in San Jose. Individuals started to report symptoms, including fever, abdominal pain, and diarrhea last Saturday, and the restaurant was closed on Sunday. No specific source of contamination has been identified. Elmo and Big Bird have a new friend, a cheerful little girl named Julia, who has autism. The character is designed to spread awareness about children with autism. According to the CDC, 1 in 68 children has an autism spectrum disorder. Chris Rock is returning to the Oscars. The 50-year-old comedian has been selected to host the award show. It'll be his second go-round. Rock hosted back in 2005. And what college town has the highest quality of life? It might be the one we're sitting in right here. According to Smart Asset, Princeton comes out on top of 100 college towns, which are analyzed based on crime rates, unemployment, median income, and the local availability of dining and entertainment. Other top college towns include Boulder, Colorado, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Cedar Falls, Iowa, and Bozeman, Montana.
Bozeman, Montana. Home of Montana State, I think, is in Bozeman. I passed through there, I think, once. I don't remember a whole lot of restaurants being available.
Not
in
a lot
Bozeman.
Of amenities there.
Maybe just quality opinion. Ones.
Well, they found something there.
Good list. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Friday eve. California's record drought has forced many cities like Santa Cruz to put in place mandatory caps on per capita water usage. If water users exceed their allocation, they get a hefty financial penalty, or they can attend Santa Cruz Water School. At the end of 2 hours of the free class, the offenders must take a test to be officially pardoned. The Wall Street Journal says instructors hand out a multiple-choice quiz of 9 questions, such as how much water comes from the San Lorenzo River. More than 800 locals have passed through water school, and about $500,000 in fines have evaporated. The test is self-graded, and you have to fix mistakes. At the end of the evening, each water violator gets a package of toilet dye tablets to check for leaks at home. Tattling on neighbors, by the way, is often more popular than changing one's own behavior. Drought shaming is one phenomenon we've told you about on the show. And the term used on social media to describe people with flourishing green lawns in this drought, grasshole. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning. Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.